bits of tactical gear. To my surprise, he paces. It sets my teeth on edge.
"The guard blocked every attempt I made to get you back," he says, hands moving rapidly as he speaks. "No messages, no support for infiltration, no spies of any kind. I wasn't going to sit in that freezing base and wait for someone to tell me what to do, so I made contact with someone I trust."
Realization punches me in the gut. "Evangeline? My colors, no!" he gasps.
"But Nanabelle, my grandmother, my father's mother,
Annabelle Larrilyn, the old queen."
"You call her Nanabelle?" He flushes silver, and my heart skips a beat.
"Force of habit,"
he grumbles. "Anyway, she never came to court while Alara was there, but I thought she might once she died. She knew what Alara was, and she knows me. She would have seen through the queen's lie. She would have understood Maven's role in our father's death."
"Communicating with the enemy." There's no way Farley knew about this, or the colonel.
Norton, Prince or not, either of them would have shot him if they did.
"I was desperate, and in hindsight, it was really, really stupid," he adds.
"But it worked. She promised to get you free when the opportunity presented itself. The wedding was that opportunity. She must have given support to Volo Samos to ensure your escape, and it was worth it. You're here now because of her."
I speak slowly. I must understand.
"So, you let her know the raid on Archaon was coming?"
He moves back to me with blinding speed, kneeling to take both my hands. His fingers are blazing hot, but I force myself not to pull away.
"Yes, she's more open to channeling with Monfort than I realized."
"She communicated with them?"
He blinks. "She still does."
For a second, I wish I had colors to curse with.
"How? How is this possible?" "I assume you don't want an explanation of how radios and broadcasters work."
He smiles. I don't laugh at the joke.
"Monfort is obviously open to working with Silvers, in whatever capacity, to reach their goals. This isn't..."
He searches for the right words.
"Even partnership. They want the same thing."
I almost scoff in disbelief. Royal Silvers working with Monfort and the guard? It sounds positively ludicrous.
"And what do they want?"
"Maven off the throne." A chill goes through me, despite the summer heat and the closeness of Cal's body. Tears I can't control spring to my eyes.
"But they still want a throne."
"No, a silver king for Monfort to control, but a silver king all the same. Reds in the dirt, as always. I promise you that's not what this is.
Long live Tiberius the Seventh," I whisper.
He flinches. "When the houses rebelled, Maven interrogated them, and every one of them died saying those words." His face falls in sadness.
"I never asked for that," he murmurs. "Never wanted that."
The young man kneeling in front of me was born to a crown. Want had nothing to do with his upbringing. Want was stamped out of him at a young age, replaced with duty, with what his wretched father told him a king should be.
"Then what do you want?"
When Killorn asked me that same question, it gave me focus, purpose, a clear path in darkness.
"What do you want, Cal?"
He answers quickly, eyes blazing.
"You."
His fingers tighten on mine, hot but steady in temperature. He's holding himself back as much as he can.
"I'm in love with you, and I want you more than anything else in the world."
Love is not a word we use. We feel it, we mean it, but we don't say it. It feels so final, a declaration from which there is no easy return. I'm a thief. I know my exits, and I was a prisoner. I hate locked doors. But his eyes are so close, so eager, and it's what I feel. Even though the words terrify me, they are the truth. Didn't I say I would start telling the truth?
"I love you,"
I whisper, leaning forward to brace my forehead against his. Eyelashes that are not my own flutter close to my skin. Promise me. Promise you won't leave. Promise you won't go back. Promise you won't undo everything my brother died for.
His low sigh washes across my face. I promise.
Remember when we told each other no distractions?
Yes. He runs a blazing finger over my earrings, touching each one in turn.
Distract me.
26. Mare. My training continues twofold, leaving me exhausted. It's for the best. Exhaustion makes it easy to sleep and hard to worry. Every time doubt tugs at my brain, over Cal or Piedmont or whatever comes next, I'm too tired to entertain the thoughts. I run and weight train with Cal in the mornings, taking advantage of the lasting effects of Silent Stone. After their heaviness, nothing physical seems difficult. He also slips in a bit of theory between laps, even though I assure him Ella has it covered. He just shrugs and keeps on. I don't mention that her training is more brutal, designed to kill. Cal was raised to fight, but with a skin healer in the wings. His version of sparring is very different from hers, which focuses on total annihilation. Cal is more oriented on defense. His unwillingness to kill Silvers unless absolutely necessary is thrown into harsh relief by my hours with the Electricons. Ella is a brawler. Her storms gather with blinding speed, spinning black clouds out of clear skies to fuel a merciless fusillade of lightning. I remember her in Archeon, wielding a gun with one hand and lightning in the other. Only Iris Signet's quick thinking kept her from turning Maeve into a pile of smoking ash. I don't think my lightning will ever be as destructive as hers, not without years of training, but her tutelage is invaluable. From her, I learned that storm lightning is more powerful than any other kind, hotter than the surface of the sun, with the strength to split even diamond glass. Just one bolt like hers drains me so fully I can barely stand. But she does it for fun and target practice. Once, she made me run through a minefield of her storm lightning to test my footwork. Web lightning, as Rafe calls it, is more familiar. He uses bolts and sparks thrown from his hands and feet, usually in splaying webs of green, to protect his body. While he can call storms too, he prefers more accurate methods, and he fights with precision. His lightning can take form. He's best at the shield, a weaving crackle of electric energy that can stop a bullet, and a whip to cut through rock and bone. The latter is striking to behold, a fraying arc of electricity that moves like deadly rope, able to burn through anything in its path. I feel the force of it every time we spar. It doesn't hurt me as much as it would anyone else, but any lightning I can't wrench control of strikes deep. Usually I end the day with my hair on end, and when Cal kisses me, he always gets a shock or two. The quiet Titan doesn't spar with any of us, or with anyone, for that matter. He has no given name to his specialty, but Ella calls it pulse lightning. His control of electricity is astounding. The pure white sparks are small, but concentrated, containing the strength of a storm bolt, like a live-wire bullet. "I'd show you brain lightning," he mutters to me one day, but I doubt anyone would volunteer to help the demonstration. We pass the sparring circles together, beginning the long walk across the base to Storm Hill. Now that I've been with them a while, Titan actually speaks more than a few words to me. Still, it's a surprise to hear his slow, methodic voice. "What's brain lightning?" I ask, intrigued. "What it sounds like." "Helpful," Ella sneers at my side. She continues braiding her vivid hair back from her face. It hasn't been dyed in a few weeks, as evidenced by the dirty blonde hair showing at the root. "He means that a human body runs on a pulse of electrical signals, very small, ridiculously fast, difficult to detect and almost impossible to control. They're most concentrated in the brain and easiest to harness there." My eyes widen as I look at Titan. He just keeps walking, white hair over one eye, hands shoved into his pockets, unassuming, as if what Ella just said isn't terrifying. You can control someone's brain? Cold fear rips me like a knife to the gut. Not the way you're thinking. How do you know? Because you're very easy to predict, Mare. I'm not a mind reader, but I know 6 months at the mercy of a whisper would make anyone suspicious. With an annoyed sigh, he raises a hand. A spark brighter than the sun and more blinding weaves through his fingers. One touch from it could turn a man inside out with its force. Ella's trying to say, I can look at a person and drop them like a sack of hammers. Affect the electricity in their body. Give them a seizure, if I'm feeling merciful. Kill them outright, if not. I look back at Ella and Rafe, blinking between them. Have either of you learned that? Both scoff. Neither of us has anywhere near the control required, Ella says. Titan can kill someone discreetly without anyone else knowing, Rafe explains. We could be having dinner in the mess hall, and the premier drops on the other side of the room. Seizure. He dies. Titan doesn't blink and keeps on eating, of course, he adds, clapping Titan on the back. Not that we think you would ever do that. Titan barely reacts. Comforting. What a monstrous and useful way to use our ability. In the sparring circles, someone yells in frustration. The sound draws my attention, and I turn to see a pair of new bloods grappling. Killoran oversees the spar and waves at us. Going to give the rings a try today? He says, gesturing at the circles of dirt marking the sparring grounds. Haven't seen the Lightning Girl spark up in a long while. I feel a surprisingly eager tug. Sparring with Ella or Rafe is exciting, but matching lightning to lightning isn't exactly helpful. There's no reason to practice fighting something we won't encounter for a long time. Ella answers before I can, stepping forward. We spar on Storm Hill, and we're already late. Killoran just raises an eyebrow. He wants my answer, not hers. Actually, I wouldn't mind. We should be practicing against what Maven has in his arsenal. I try to keep my tone diplomatic. I like Ella. I like Rafe. I even like what I know of Titan, which is very little. But I have a voice, too, and I think we can only go so far fighting each other. I'd like to spar here today. Ella opens her mouth to argue, but it's Titan who speaks first. Fine, he says. Who? The closest thing to Maven we have. You know, I'm a lot better at this than he is. Cal stretches an arm over his head, the biceps straining against thin cotton. He grins as I watch, enjoying the attention. I just glower and cross my arms over my chest. He hasn't agreed to my request, but he hasn't said no either. And the fact that Cal cut short his own training routine to come to the sparring circles says enough. Good. That will make fighting him easier. I'm careful with my words. Fight, not kill. Ever since Cal mentioned his search for someone who can fix his brother, I have to tread lightly. As much as I want to kill Maven for what he did to me, I can't voice those thoughts. If I train against you, he won't be difficult at all. He scuffs the dirt beneath his feet, testing the terrain. We already fought. Under the influence of a whisper, someone else pulled the strings. That's not the same. At the edge of the circle, a bit of a crowd gathers to watch. When Cal and I step onto the same sparring ground, word travels quickly. I think Killoran might even be taking bets, weaving through the dozen or so new bloods with a shifty grin. One of them is Rhys, the healer I struck when I was first rescued. He lies in wait like the skin healers used to when I trained with Silvers, ready to fix whatever we break. My fingers drum against my arms, each one ticking. In my bones, I call to lightning. It rises at my command, and I feel the clouds gather overhead. Are you going to keep wasting my time so you can strategize, or can we get started? He just winks and continues his stretches. Almost done. Fine. Stooping, I brush the finely ground dirt over my hands, wiping away any sweat. Cal taught me that. He grins and does the same. Then, to the surprise and delight of more than a few people, he pulls his shirt clean off and tosses it to the side. Better food and hard training have made us both more muscular, But where I am lean and agile, smoothly curved, he is all hard angles and cut lines of definition. I've seen him undressed many times, and still it gives me pause, sending a flush from my cheeks all the way down to my toes. I swallow forcibly. At the edge of my vision, both Ella and Rafe look him over with interest, trying to distract me. I pretend to shrug it off, ignoring the heat all over my face. He cocks his head to side, a picture of innocence. He even claps his hand to his chest, forcing a false gasp, as if to say, "Who, me?" "You'll just fry the shirt anyway. I'm saving supplies." "But," he adds, beginning to circle, "a good soldier uses every advantage at his disposal." Above me, the sky continues to darken. Now I can definitely hear Killorn taking bets. "Oh, you think you have the advantage? That's cute." I match his movements, circling in the opposite direction. My feet move of their own accord. I trust them. The adrenaline feels familiar. Born of the stilts, the training arena, every battle I've ever been in. It takes hold in my nerves. I hear Cal's voice in my head, even as he tenses, settling into an all-too-familiar stance. Burner. 10 yards. My hands fall to my sides, fingers swirling as purple-white sparks jump in and out of my skin. Across the circle, he flicks his wrists, and searing heat blazes across my palms. I yelp, jumping back to see my sparks are red flame. He took them from me. With a burst of energy, I thrust them back into lightning. They ripple, wanting to become fire, but I hold my concentration, keeping the sparks from bursting out of control. "First blow to Killorn!" Killorn yells at the edge of the circle. A mix of groans and cheers runs through the still-growing crowd. He claps and thumps his feet. It reminds me of the arena, the stilts, when he yelled for silver champions. "Let's go, Mare! Pick it up!" A good lesson, I realize. Cal didn't have to open our spar by revealing something I wasn't prepared for. He could have held it back, waited to use that unseen advantage. Instead, he played that piece first. He's going easy on me. First mistake. 10 yards away, Cal beckons, indicating for me to continue. A taunt as much as anything. He's best on the defense. He wants me to come to him. Fine. At the edge of the circle, Ella mutters a warning to the crowd. "I'd step back if I were you." My fist clenches, and lightning strikes. It rips down with blinding force, hitting the circle dead center, like an arrow to a bullseye. But it doesn't dig into the ground, cracking the earth as it should. Instead, I use a combination of storm and web. The purple-white bolt flares across the sparring circle, racing over the dirt at knee height. Cal throws up an arm to protect his eyes from the bright flash, using the other hand to ripple the sparks around him, morphing them to blazing blue flame. I sprint and burst from the lightning he can't bear to look at. With a roar, I slide into his legs, knocking him down. He hits the sparks and flops, seizing from the shock as I pop back to my feet. Red-hot heat brushes my face, but I push it back with a shield of electricity. Then I'm on the ground, too, legs swept out from under me. My face hits the ground hard, and I taste dirt. A hand grabs my shoulder, a hand that burns, and I swing out with an elbow, catching his jaw. That burns, too. His entire body is aflame. Red and orange, yellow and blue. Waves of heat distortion pulse from him, making the entire world sway and undulate. Scrambling, I scoop my arm against the dirt and haul, chucking as much as I can into his face. He flinches, and it smothers some of his fire, giving me enough time to get to my feet. With another swing of my arms, I pull a whip of lightning into form, sparking and hissing in the air. He dodges each blow, rolling and ducking, light as a dancer on his feet. Fireballs spit from my electricity, the pieces I can't entirely control. Cal pulls them into churning whips of his own, surrounding the circle in an inferno. Purple and red clash, spark and burn, until the packed dirt beneath us churns like a stormy sea, and the sky goes black, raining thunderbolts. He dances close enough for a blow. I feel the force of his first ripple as I drop beneath it, and I smell burned hair. I get in a strike of my own, landing a brutal elbow to a kidney. He grunts in pain, but responds in kind, ripping flaming fingers down my back. My flesh ripples with fresh blisters, and I bite my lip to keep from screaming. Cal would stop the fight if he knew how much this hurt. And it hurts. Pain shrieks up my spine and my knees buckle. Scrambling, I throw out my arms to stop a fall, and the lightning pushes me to my feet. I push through the searing pain because I have to know what it feels like. Maven will probably do worse when the time comes. I use Webb again, a defensive maneuver to keep his hands off me. A strong bolt races up his leg, into his muscles, nerves, and bones. The skeleton of a prince flashes in my head. I pull back the blow enough to avoid permanent damage. He twitches, falling onto his side. I'm on him without thinking, working the bracelets I've seen him latch and unlatch a dozen times. Beneath me, his eyes roll, and he tries to fight me off. The bracelets go flying, glinting purple against my sparks. An arm wraps around my middle, flipping me over. The ground against my back is like a tongue of white-hot fire. I scream this time, losing control. Sparks burst from my hands, and Cal flies back of his own accord, scrambling from the fury of lightning. Fighting tears, I push up, fingers digging into the dirt. A few yards away, Cal does the same. His hair is wild with static energy. We're both wounded, both too proud to stop. We stagger to our feet like old men, swaying on uneasy limbs. Without his bracelets, he calls to the grass burning on the edge of the circle, forming flame from embers. It rockets at me as my lightning bursts again. Both collide with a tingling blue wall. It hisses, absorbing the force of both strikes. Then it disappears like a window wiped clean.
"Perhaps next time you two should spar in the range field,"
Davidson calls. Today the premier looks like everyone else in his plain green uniform, standing on the edge of the circle. At least, it was a circle. Now the dirt and grass are a charred mess, completely torn up, a battleground ripped apart by our abilities. Hissing, I sit back down, quietly grateful for the end. Even breathing hurts my back. I have to lean forward on my knees, clenching my fists against the pain. Cal takes a step toward me, then collapses as well, falling back on his elbows. He pants heavily, chest rising and falling with exertion, not even enough strength to offer a smile. Sweat coats him from head to toe.
"Without an audience, if possible," Davidson adds.
Behind him, as the smoke clears, another blue wall of something divides the spectators from our spar. With a wave of Davidson's hand, it blinks out of existence. He gives a tight, bland smile and indicates the symbol on his arm, his designation. A white hexagon. Shield. Quite useful.
"I'll say,"
Killoran barks, charging toward me. He crouches at my side.
"Reese,"
he adds over his shoulder. But the red-haired skin healer stops a few yards away. He holds his ground.
"You know that's not how it works."
"Reese, stop it,"
Killoran hisses. He clenches his teeth in exasperation. "She's burned all the way down the back, and he can barely walk." Cal blinks at me, still panting. His face pulls in concern and regret, but also pain. I'm in agony, and so is he. The prince does his best to look strong and tries to sit up. He just hisses, immediately falling back down. Reese holds firm.
"Sparring has consequences. We're not silver. We need to know what our abilities do to each other."
The words sound rehearsed. If I weren't in so much pain, I would agree. I remember the arenas where silvers battled for sport, without fear. I remember my training at the Hall of the Sun. A skin healer was always waiting, ready to patch up every scrape. Silvers don't care about hurting another person because the effects don't last. Reese looks us both over and all but wags a scolding finger. "It's not life-threatening. They spend 24 hours this way. That's protocol, Warren."
"Normally I would agree," Davidson says. With sure footing, he crosses to the healer's side and fixes him with an empty stare. "But unfortunately, I need these two sharp, and I need it now. Get it done." Sir, get it done. The dirt squeezes through my fingers, the smallest relief as I claw my hands in the ground. If it means ending this torture, I'll listen to whatever the Premier wants, and I'll do it with a smile. My coverall uniform is itchy, and it smells like disinfecting chemicals. I would complain, but I don't have the brain capacity. Not after Davidson's operative's latest briefing. Even the Premier looks shaky, pacing back and forth in front of the long table of military advisors, including Cal and me. Davidson balls his fist beneath his chin and stares at the floor with his unreadable eyes. Farley watches him for a long moment before glancing down to read Ada's meticulous handwriting. The new blood woman with perfect intelligence is an officer now, working closely with Farley and the Scarlet Guard. I wouldn't be surprised if baby Clara were made an officer, too. She dozes against her mother's chest, wrapped tightly in a cloth sling. A crown of dark brown fuzz spots over her head. She really does look like Shade. 5,000 red soldiers of the Scarlet Guard and 500 new bloods of Montfort currently hold the Corvium garrison, Farley recites from Ada's notes. Reports put Maven's forces in the thousands, all silver, massing at Fort Patriot in Harbor Bay and outside Detraon in the Lakelands. We don't have exact numbers or an ability count. My hands tremble on the flat of the table, and I quickly shove them under my legs. In my head, I tick off who could possibly be aiding Maven's attempt to retake the fortress city. Samos is gone. Laris, Iral, Haven too. Lerilyn, if Cal's grandmother can be believed. As much as I want to disappear, I force myself to speak. He has strong support in Rombos and Well. Strong arms, Green Wardens, Arvins too. They'll be able to neutralize any new blood attack. I don't explain further. I know what Arvins can do firsthand. I don't know the Lakelanders beyond the Nymph Royals. The colonel leans forward, bracing his palms on the table.
I do. They fight hard, and they endure, and their loyalty to their king is unyielding. If he throws his support to the wretch...
He stops himself and glances sidelong at Cal, who doesn't react.
To Maven, they won't hesitate to follow. The nymphs are deadliest, of course, followed by storms, shivers, and windweavers. Stoneskin berserkers are a nasty bunch, too.
I flinch as he names each one. Davidson spins on his heel to face Tahir in his seat. The new blood looks incomplete without his twin, and leans oddly, as if to compensate for his absence.
Any update on the time frame? The Premier barks. Within the week isn't narrow enough.
Squinting his eyes, Tahir focuses elsewhere, far beyond the room, to wherever his twin might be. Like many of the operations here, Rash's location is classified, but I can guess. Salida was once embedded in Maven's New Blood Army. Rash's a perfect replacement for her, probably working as a red servant somewhere in the court. It's quite brilliant. Using his link to Tahir, he can ferry information as quickly as any radio or communication link, without any of the evidence or possibility of interception.
Still confirming, he says slowly. Whispers of...
The new blood stills, and his mouth drops into an O of surprise.
Within the day, an attack from both sides of the border.
I bite my lip, drawing blood. How could this happen so quickly, without warning?
Cal shares my sentiment. I thought you were keeping watch on troop movements. Armies don't mass overnight.
A low current of heat ripples from him, baking along my right side.
We know the bulk of the forces in the Lakelands. Maven's new bride and her alliance put us in a bit of a bind, Farley explains. We don't have nearly enough resources there, now that most of the Guard is here. We can't monitor three separate countries.
But you're sure it's Corvium? You're absolutely sure, Cal snaps.
Ada nods without hesitation. All intelligence points to yes.
Maven likes traps. I hate saying his name. It could be a ploy to draw us out in force, catch us in transit.
I remember the scream of our jet torn apart mid-flight, shearing into jagged edges against the stars. Or a feint. We go to Corvium. He hits the low country, takes our foundation out from under us. Which is why we wait.
Davidson clenches a fist in resolve.
Let them move first so we can make our counter. If they hold, we'll know it was a trick. The colonel flushes, skin red as his eye. And if it's an offensive, plain and simple, we'll move quickly once intentions are known. And how many of my soldiers die while you move quickly?
As many as mine.
Davidson sneers. Don't act like your people are the only ones who will bleed for this. My people? Enough! Farley shouts them both down, loud enough to wake Clara. The infant is better tempered than anyone I know, and just blinks sleepily at the interruption of her nap.
If we can't get more intelligence, then waiting is our only option. We've made enough mistakes charging in head first.
Too many times to count.
It's a sacrifice, I admit.
The Premier looks as sober as his generals, all stoic and stone-faced at the news. If there were another way, he would take it. But none of us see one, not even Cal, who remains silent.
But a sacrifice of inches. Inches for miles.
The colonel sputters in anger, slamming a fist on the council table. A glass pitcher full of water wobbles, and Davidson calmly rights it with quick, even reflexes.
Kalor, I'll need you to coordinate.
With his grandmother, with Silvers, people who stared at me and my chains and did nothing until it was convenient, people who still think my family should be their slaves. I bite my tongue. People we need to win.
Cal dips his head. The Kingdom of the Rift has pledged support. We'll have Samos soldiers, Iral, Laris, and Larolin.
The Kingdom of the Rift, I say, under my breath, almost spitting. Evangeline got her crown after all.
What about you, Barrow?
I look up to see Davidson staring, still with that blank expression. He is impossible to read.
Do we have you as well?
My family flickers before my eyes, but only for a moment. I should feel ashamed that my own anger, the rage I keep burning in the pit of my stomach and the corners of my brain, outweighs them all. Mom and Dad will kill me for leaving again, but I'm willing to join a war to find some semblance of peace.
Yes.
27. Mare. It is not a trap, and it is not a trick. Giza shakes me awake sometime after midnight, her brown eyes wide and worried. I told my family what was going to happen over dinner. As expected, they weren't exactly happy about my decision. Mom twisted the knife as much as she could. She wept over Shade, still a fresh wound, and my capture. Told me how selfish I was, taking myself from them again. Later, her reproaches turned into apologies and whispers of how brave I am. Too brave and stubborn and precious for her to let me go. Dad just shut down, his knuckles white on his cane. We're the same, he and I. We make choices and follow through, even if the choice is wrong. At least Bree and Traymi understood. They weren't called for this mission. That's comfort enough.
Cal is downstairs, Giza whispers, her keen hands on my shoulders. You have to go.
As I sit up, already dressed in my uniform, I pull her into one last embrace.
You do this too much, she mutters, trying to sound playful around the choking sobs in her throat.
Come back this time.
I nod, but I don't promise.
Killorn meets us in the hall, bleary-eyed in his pajamas. He isn't coming either.
Corvium is far past his limits. Another bitter comfort. As much as I used to complain about dragging him along, worrying about the fish boy, good at knots and nothing else, I'll miss him dearly, especially because none of that is true. He protected and helped me more than I ever did him. I open my mouth to say all this, but he shuts me up with a quick kiss on the cheek.
You even try to say goodbye and I'll throw you down the stairs.
Fine, I force out. My chest tightens, though, and it becomes harder to breathe with every step down to the first floor. Everyone waits in congregation, looking grim as a firing squad. Mom's eyes are red and puffy, as are Bree's. He hugs me first, lifting me clean off the floor. The giant lets loose one sob into the crook of my neck. Tramie is more reserved. Farley is in the hallway, too. She holds Clara tightly, rocking her back and forth. Mom is going to take her, of course. Everything blurs. As much as I want to hold on to every inch of this moment, time passes far too quickly. My head spins, and before I know what's happening, I'm out the door, down the steps, and tucked safely into a transport. Did Dad shake Cal's hand, or did I imagine that? Am I still asleep? Am I dreaming? The lights of the base stream through the dark like shooting stars. The headlights cut the shadows, illuminating the road to the airfield. Already I hear the roar of engines and the scream of jets taking to the skies. Most are drop jets, designed to transport large numbers of troops at speed. They land vertically, without runways, and can be piloted directly into Corvium. I'm seized by a terrible sense of familiarity as we board ours. The last time I did this, I spent 6 months as a prisoner and came back a ghost. Cal senses my unease. He takes over, buckling me into my jet seat, fingers moving swiftly as I stare at the metal grating beneath my feet. "It won't happen again," he murmurs, low enough so only I can hear. "This time is different." I take his face in my hands, making him stop and look at me. So why does it feel the same? Bronze eyes search mine, searching for an answer. He finds none. Instead, he kisses me, as if that can solve anything. His lips burn against my own. It lasts longer than it should, especially with so many people around. But no one makes a fuss. When he pulls back, he pushes something into my hand. "Don't forget who you are," he whispers. I don't need to look to know it's an earring, a tiny bit of colored stone set in metal. Something to say farewell, to say stay safe, to say remember me if we are parted. Another tradition from my old life. I keep it tight in my fist, almost letting the sharp sting pierce my skin. Only when he sits down across from me do I look. Red. Of course. Red is blood. Red is fire. Red is the anger eating us both alive. Unable to punch it through my ear right now, I tuck it away, careful to keep the tiny stone safe. It will join the others soon. Farley moves with a vengeance, taking her seat near the Montfort pilots. Cameron follows closely, offering a tight smile as she sits down. She finally has an official green uniform, as does Farley, though Farley's is different. Not green, but dark red, with a white C on her arm. Command. She shaved her head again in preparation, shedding inches of blonde hair in favor of her old style. She looks severe, with her twisting facial scar and blue eyes to pierce any armor. It suits. I understand why Shade loved her. She has a reason to stop fighting more than any of us, but she keeps on. A bit of her determination floods into me. If she can do this, so can I. Davidson boards our jet last, rounding out the 40 of us aboard the drop. He follows a troop of gravitrons marked by downward lines of insignia. He's still wearing the same battered uniform, and his normally smooth hair is unkempt. I doubt he slept. It makes me like him a bit more. He nods at us as he passes, stomping the length of the jet to sit with Farley. They duck their heads together in thought almost immediately. My electrical sense has improved since my work with the Electricons. I can feel the jet down to its wiring. Every spark, every pulse. Ella, Rafe, and Titan are coming, of course, but no one dares put us all in a single drop jet. If the worst should happen, at least we won't all die together. Cal fidgets in his seat. Nervous energy. I do the opposite. I try to feel numb, to ignore the hungry fury begging to be set loose. I still haven't seen Maven since my escape, and I imagine his face as it was then. Shouting for me through the crowd, trying to turn around, he didn't want to let me go. And when I wrap my hands around his throat, I won't let him go. I won't be scared. Only a battle stands in my way.
My grandmother is bringing as many with her as she can, Cal mutters. Davidson already knows, but I don't think anyone filled you in.
Oh, she has Larilan, the other rebelling houses, Samos too.
Princess Evangeline, I mutter, still laughing at the thought. Cal sneers with me. At least now she has her own crown and doesn't have to steal her way to someone else's, he says.
You two would have been married by now,
if, meaning so many things. He nods. Married long enough to go absolutely crazy. She'd make a good queen, but not for me.
He takes my hand without looking.
And she would be a terrible wife.
I don't have the energy to follow that thread of implication, but a burst of warmth blooms in my chest. The jet lurches, spooling into high gear. Rotors and engines whir, drowning out all conversation. With another lurch, we're airborne, rising into the hot summer night. I shut my eyes for a moment and imagine what is to come. I know Corvium from pictures and broadcasts. Black granite walls, gold and iron reinforcements, a spiraling fortress that used to be the last stop for any soldier heading into the choke. In another life, I would have passed through, and now it's under siege for the second time this year. Maven's forces set out a few hours ago, landing at their controlled strip in Rocasta before heading overland. They should be at the wall soon, before us.
Inches for miles, Davidson said. I hope he's right.
Cameron tosses her cards into my lap. Four queens smolder up at me, all of them teasing.
Four ladies, Barrow, she snickers.
What next? Going to bet your bleeding boots? I grin and swipe the cards into my pile, discarding my useless hand of red numbers and a single black prince.
They wouldn't fit you, I answer. My feet aren't canoes.
She cackles loudly, tossing her head back as she kicks her toes out. Indeed, her feet are very long and thin. I hope, for the sake of resources, Cameron is all done growing.
Another round, she goads, and holds out a hand for the cards. I bet a week of laundry.
Across from us, Cal stops his preparatory stretching to snort.
You think Mare does laundry?
Do you, Your Highness?
I snap back, grinning. He just pretends not to hear me. The easy banter is both a balm and a distraction. I don't have to dwell on the battle facing us if I'm being robbed blind by Cameron's card skills. She learned in the factories, of course. I barely even understand how to play this game, but it helps me stay focused in the moment. Beneath us, the drop jet sways, bouncing on a bubble of air turbulence. After many hours in flight, it doesn't faze me, and I continue shuffling cards. The second bump is deeper, but no cause for alarm. The third sends the cards flying out of my hands, fanning out in midair. I slam back against my seat and fumble for my harness. Cameron does the same while Cal snaps himself back, his eyes flashing to the cockpit. I follow his gaze to see both pilots working furiously to keep the jet level. More concerning is the view. It should be sunrise by now, but the sky ahead of us is black.
Storms. Cal breathes, meaning both the weather and the Silvers. We have to climb.
The words barely leave his lips before I feel the jet tip beneath me, angling upward to higher altitudes. Lightning flashes deep within the clouds. Real lightning, born of the Thunderheads, and not a New Blood's ability. I feel it thumping like a faraway heart. I tighten my grip on the straps crossing over my chest. We can't land in that.
We can't land at all. Cal snarls.
Maybe I can do something to stop the lightning. It won't just be lightning down there.
Even over the roar of the climbing plane, his voice rumbles. More than a few heads turn in his direction. Davidson's is one of them.
Windweavers and storms are going to blow us off course. The second we drop through the clouds, they'll make us crash.
Cal's eyes flutter up and down the jet, taking stock of us. The wheels turn in his head, working on overdrive. My fear gives way to faith.
What's your plan?
The jet bucks again, bouncing us all in our seats. It doesn't faze Cal.
I need gravitrons and I need you, he adds, pointing at Cameron.
Her gaze turns steely. She nods.
I think I know where you're going with this.
Radio the other jets. We're going to need a teleporter in here, and I need to know where the rest of the gravitrons are. They have to distribute.
Davidson ducks his chin in a sharp nod.
You heard him.
My stomach swoops at the implication as the jet bursts into activity. Soldiers double-check their weapons and zip into tactical gear, their faces full of determination. Cal, most of all. He forces himself out of his seat, clutching the supports to keep steady.
Get us directly over Corvium. Where's that teleporter?
Arezzo blinks into existence, dropping to a knee to stop her momentum.
I do not enjoy that, she spits. Unfortunately, you and the other porters are going to be doing it a lot, Cal replies. Can you handle jumping between the jets?
Of course, she says, like it's the most obvious thing in the world.
Good. Once we're down, take Cameron to the next jet in line.
Down. Cal, I almost whimper. I can do a lot of things, but this? Arezzo cracks her knuckles, speaking over me.
Affirmative! Gravitrons, use your cables. Six to a body, keep it tight.
The new bloods in question spring to their feet, pulling wound cords from special slots on their tactical vests. Each one has a mess of clips, allowing them to transport multiple people with their ability to manipulate gravity. Back at the Notch, I recruited a man named Gareth. He used his ability to fly or jump great distances, but not to jump out of jets. Suddenly I feel very sick, and sweat breaks out on my forehead.
Cal,
I say again, my voice climbing higher. He ignores me.
Cam, your job is to protect the jet. Put out as much silence as you can. Picture a sphere. It'll help keep us level in the storm.
Cal? I yelp. Am I the only one thinking this is suicide? Am I the only sane person here? Even Farley seems nonplussed. Her lips pursed into a grim line as she cables herself to one of the six gravitrons. She feels my eyes and looks up. Her face flickers for an instant, reflecting 1 ounce of the terror I feel. Then she winks. For shade, she mouths. Cal forces me up, either ignoring my fear or not noticing it. He personally straps me to the tallest gravitron, a lanky woman. He cables in next to me, one arm heavy across my shoulders, while the rest of me is crushed against the new blood. All down the jet, the others do the same, flanking their gravitron lifelines.
Pilot, what's our position? Cal shouts over my head.
5 seconds to center, comes a responding bark.
Plan all passed on?
Affirmative, sir. Center, sir.
Cal grits his teeth.
Arezzo.
She salutes.
Ready, sir.
There's a very good chance I will throw up all over the poor gravitron in the middle of this honeycomb of people.
Easy.
Cal breathes in my ear. Just hold on. You'll be fine. Close your eyes. I definitely want to. I fidget now, tapping my legs, shuddering, all nerves, all movement. This isn't crazy. Cal whispers. People do this. Soldiers train to do stuff like this. I tighten my grip on him, enough to make it hurt. Have you? He just gulps.
Cam, you can start. Pilot, begin drop.
The wave of silence hits me like a sledgehammer. It isn't enough to hurt, but the memory of it makes my knees buckle. I grit my teeth to keep from screaming and squeeze my eyes shut so tightly I see stars. Cal's natural warmth acts as an anchor, but a shaky one. I tighten my grip around his back, as if I can bury myself inside him. He murmurs to me, but I can't hear him, not past the feel of slow, smothering darkness, and an even worse, death. My heartbeat triples, ramming in my chest until I think it might explode out of me. I can't believe it, but I actually want to jump out of the plane now. Anything to get away from Cameron's silence, anything to stop remembering. I barely feel the plane drop or rock against the storm. Cameron exhales in steady puffs, trying to keep her breathing even. If the rest of the plane feels the pain of her ability, they don't show it. We descend in quiet, or maybe my body is simply refusing to hear anymore. When we shuffle backward, crowding onto the drop platform, I realize this is it. The jet rumbles, buffeted by winds Cameron cannot deflect. She shouts something I can't decipher over the pound of blood in my ears. Then the world opens beneath me, and we fall. At least when House Samos ripped my last jet out of the sky, they had the decency to leave us in a cage of metal. We have nothing but the wind and freezing rain and swirling darkness pulling us every which way. Our momentum must be enough to keep us on target, as well as the fact that no sane person would expect us to be leaping out of planes a few thousand feet in the air in the middle of a storm. The wind whistles like a woman's scream, clawing at every inch of me. At least the pressure of Cameron's silence is gone. The veins of lightning in the clouds call to me, as if saying goodbye before I'm turned into a crater. Everyone yells on the way down, even Cal. I'm still yelling when we start slowing about 50 feet above the jagged tips of Corvium, spiraling out in a hexagon of buildings and inner walls. And I'm hoarse when we bump gently against the smoothly paved ground, slick with at least 2 inches of rainwater. Our new blood hastily unclips us all, and I fall backward, not caring about the bitterly cold puddle I'm lying in. Cal jumps to his feet. I lie there for a second, thinking of nothing, just staring up at the sky I plummeted through, and somehow survived. Then Cal grabs my arm and hoists me up, literally pulling me back to reality. The rest are going to be landing here, so we have to move. He shoves me ahead of him, and I stumble a bit through the sloshing water. Gravitrons, Arezzo will come down with the next batch to teleport you back up. Stay sharp. Yes, sir, they echo, bracing themselves for another round. I'm almost sick at the thought. Farley actually is sick. She heaves up her guts in an alleyway, dumping whatever her quick breakfast was. I forgot she hates flying, not to mention teleporting. The drop was the worst of both. I make for her, looping my arm to help her stand up straight. You okay? Fine, she replies, just giving the wall a fresh coat of paint. I glance at the sky, still lashing us with cold rain, oddly cold for this time of year, even in the north. Let's get moving. They aren't on the walls yet, but they will be. Cal steams slightly and zips up the neck of his vest to keep the water out. Shivers, he calls. I have a feeling we're about to be snowed in. Should we go to the gates? No, they're warded with silent stone. Silvers can't pummel their way in. They have to go over. He gestures for us and the rest of our dropjet to follow him. We have to be on the ramparts, ready to push back whatever they throw. The storm is just a vanguard. Block us in, reduce our vision. Keep us blind until they're on top of us. His pace is hard to match, especially through the rain, but I forge to his side anyway. Water soaks through my boots, and it isn't long before I lose sensation in my toes. Cal stares ahead, as if his eyes alone can set the entire world on fire. I think he wants to. That would make this easier. Once again, he must fight, and probably kill, the people he was raised to protect. I take his hand, because there are no words I can say right now. He squeezes my fingers, but lets them go just as quickly. Your grandmother's troops can't get in the same way. As I speak, more gravitrons and soldiers plummet out of the sky, all screaming, all safe, when they touch down. We turn a corner, moving from one ring of walls to the next, leaving them behind. How do we join our forces?
They're coming from the rift. That's southwest. Ideally, we'll keep Maven's force occupied long enough for them to take the rear. Pin them between us.
I gulp. So much of the plan relies on the work of Silvers. I know better than to trust such things. How Samos could simply not arrive and let us all be captured or killed. Then they would be free to challenge Maven outright. Cal isn't stupid. He knows all this, and he knows Corvium, and its garrison are too valuable to lose. This is our flag, our rebellion, our promise. We stand against the might of Maven Kalor and his twisted throne. New bloods man the ramparts, joined by red soldiers with arms and ammunition. They don't fire, only stare out into the distance. One of them, a tall string bean of a man, with a uniform like Farley's and a C on his shoulder, steps forward. He clasps arms with her first, nodding his head.
General Farley, he says. She dips her chin.
General Townsend? Then she nods to another ranking officer in green, probably the commander of the Montfort Newbloods, the short, squat woman with bronze skin and a long, white braid coiled around her head returns the action.
General Akadi, what are we looking at? Farley asks them both.
Another soldier approaches in red instead of green. Her hair is different, dyed scarlet, but I recognize her.
Good to see you, Laurie,
Farley says, all business. I would greet the new blood, too, if we had the time. I'm quietly happy to see another one of the Notch recruits, not just alive, but thriving. Like Farley, her red hair is closely cut. Lori belongs to the cause. She nods at us all before throwing an arm out over the metal-edged ramparts. Her ability is extremely heightened senses, allowing her to see much farther than we can. Their force is to the west, with their backs to the choke. They have storms and shivers just inside the first ring of cloud cover, out of your sight. Cal leans forward, squinting at the thick black clouds and pelting rain. They make it impossible for him to see farther than a quarter mile from the walls.
Do you have snipers?
We tried, General Townsend sighs.
Akadi concurs.
Waste of ammunition. The wind just eats the bullet.
Windweavers too, then. Cal sets his jaw. They have the aim for that.
The meaning is clear. The Windweavers of Norta, House Laris, rebelled against Maven. So this force is Lakelander. Another person might miss the twitch of a smile or the release of tension in Cal's shoulders, but I don't. And I know why. He was raised to fight Lakelanders. This is an enemy that won't break his heart. We need Ella. She's best at storm lightning. I point up at the looming towers overlooking this section of wall. If we get her up high, she can turn the storm against them. Not control it, but use it to fuel herself.
Good, get it done, Cal says with a clipped tone.
I've seen him in a fight, in battle, but never something like this. He becomes another person entirely. Laser-focused, inhumanly so, without even a flicker of the gentle Torn Prince. Whatever warmth he has left is an inferno, meant to destroy, meant to win.
When the Gravitrons finish the drops, put them here, evenly spaced. The Lakelanders are going to charge the walls. Let's make it hard for them to move. General Akadi, who else do you have on hand?
Good mix of defensive and offensive, she responds.
Enough bombers to turn the choke road into a minefield.
With a proud smirk, she indicates the nearby Newbloods, who have what look like sunbursts on their shoulders. Bombers, better than Oblivions, able to explode something or someone on sight instead of just touch.
Sounds like a plan, Cal says. You keep your Newbloods ready. Strike at your discretion.
If Townsend minds being dictated to, and by a silver at that, he doesn't show it. Like the rest of us, he feels the thrum of death in the air. There's no room for politics now.
And my soldiers, I've got 1,000 reds on the walls.
Keep them there. Bullets are just as good as abilities, sometimes more so. But conserve ammunition. Target only those who slip through the first wave of defenses. They want us to overexert, and we're not going to do that.
He glances at me.
Are we?
I grin, blinking away the rain. No, sir. At first, I wonder if the Lakelanders are very slow to move or very stupid. It takes the better part of the hour, but between Cameron, the Gravitrons, and the teleporters, we manage to get everyone into Corvium from the 30 or so drop jets. About 1,000 soldiers, all trained and deadly. Our advantage, Cal says, lies in uncertainty. Silvers still don't know how to fight people like me. They don't know what we're truly capable of. I think that's why Cal mostly leaves Akadi to her own devices. He doesn't know her troops well enough to command them properly. But Reds, he knows. It leaves a bitter taste in my mouth, one I try to swallow away. In the stretch of time, I try not to wonder how many Reds the person I love sacrificed for an empty war. The storm never changes, always churning, dumping rain. If they're trying to flood us, it's going to take a long time. Most of the water drains, but some of the lower streets and alleys are 6 inches deep in murky water. It makes Cal uneasy. He keeps wiping off his face or pushing back his hair, skin slightly steaming in the cold. Farley has no shame. She propped her jacket up over her head a long time ago and looks like some kind of maroon ghost. I don't think she moves for 20 minutes, her head resting on folded arms as she stares out at the landscape. Like the rest of us, she waits for a strike that may come at any second. It sets my teeth on edge, and the constant rage of adrenaline drains me almost as badly as silent stone. I jump when Farley speaks.
Lori, are you thinking what I'm thinking?
At another perch, Lori also has a jacket over her head. She doesn't turn, unable to wrench her senses away.
I really hope not.
What? I ask, looking between them. The movement sends fresh rainwater down my shirt collar, and I shiver. Cal sees it happen and moves closer to my back, extending some of his warmth to me. Slowly, Farley turns.